Welcome back. Today we're doing a deep dive into a fascinating batch of reports from the AI Unraveled Daily Rundown, specifically looking at September 23rd, 2025. And if you boil it all down, there's this really stark contradiction running through everything, isn't there?
There really is.
On one side, you see these, just unprecedented investments, billions upon billions pouring into building the actual stuff for AI. Huge infrastructure.
Yeah, the physical scale is immense.
But then, like, right alongside that, you get these very immediate, very real failures. You know, things going wrong mechanically, human errors, plus this growing sort of unease about what all this tech is actually doing to us day to day. So our mission today really is to try and make sense of that paradox for you. How do you square a $100 billion deal with a robo-taxi crashing on day one? Or, you know, the frustration people are feeling in the office.
That's exactly right. And I think it's crucial that we look at this less like a software update and more like physics. The biggest story isn't some new feature. It's the sheer physical hunger of AI, the resources it needs.
Right.
We're moving really fast from just talking about code to these massive engineering challenges, power grids, supply chains. It's fundamental infrastructure.
Okay.
So you absolutely have to look past the algorithms, you know, look at what AI needs to even run at the scale they're planning. And that means infrastructure, yeah, but it also means immediate human impacts.
Got it. Okay, so let's unpack that. Let's start where the big money is flowing, what we're calling the gigawatt gambit. Because these numbers, they don't sound like company budgets anymore. They sound like, I don't know, national economies.
That's a good way to put it. And discussing this infrastructure is key because it really tells you who's going to control AI's future.
So the headline grabber, NVIDIA's plan, $100 billion investment. Aimed specifically at building these huge dedicated data centers for open AI, like AI factories.
Exactly, AI factories.
And the plan is to deploy NVIDIA systems that, get this, total 10 gigawatts of power. Now, 10 gigawatts sounds massive, but like, what does that actually mean? Can you put that in perspective?
It's a scale we haven't really seen before for this kind of thing. To give you a sense, 10 gigawatts, that's enough power for roughly 8 million homes in the U.S.
8 million homes. Wow.
It's so big that even OpenAI's CEO, Sam Altman, he called it an unprecedented infrastructure challenge. It's basically what they see as the baseline energy needed for the next wave of AI models.
And the hardware to actually use all that power, the GPUs? That number is pretty wild, too.
Oh, absolutely. NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, he pointed out this one project. It needs somewhere between 4 and 5 million GPUs.
Wait, 4 to 5 million?
Million. And that's double the total number NVIDIA shipped in all of 2024.
Double their entire output from last year.
Correct.
For one project.
It shows the demand isn't just climbing. It's like jumping exponentially, orders of magnitude.
Okay, so the scale is just immense. But what's the strategy here? Why this massive deal?
Well, it's hugely significant strategically. For OpenAI, look, this is a lifeline. It's a very calculated move to cut their dependence on Microsoft for cloud computing.
Okay, buying independence.
Buying independence and the ability to scale up without hitting someone else's limits.
And for NVIDIA, what's in it for them? Essentially bankrolling their biggest customer like this.
Well, for NVIDIA, it creates this, what one analyst called a powerful defensive moat.
A moat?
Yeah. By putting down $100 billion, they basically get to, quote, pick winners and losers in the AI race. They're locking in the biggest player.
Right.
It cements NVIDIA as the, you know, the central must-have platform for this whole AI era. And crucially, it probably puts a damper on OpenAI's own plans, which are expensive to make their own custom chips.
Which would be the biggest threat to NVIDIA's dominance.
Exactly. So it looks like an infrastructure deal, but underneath it's a major industry power play.
And just to hammer home the scale, NVIDIA's CEO called this the first 10 gigawatts.
Implying this is just the start, the baseline.
So the infrastructure challenge is really just getting started, okay? But here's where it gets really interesting, I think. You have that massive investment story, billions and gigawatts.
Right, the grand vision.
And then you immediately pivot to the real world right now, where things are being tested and sometimes failing quite noticeably.
Yeah, the gap between the ambition and the current execution in some areas is pretty stark.
Take the reports on Tesla's robo-taxi test down in Austin. First day, July 1st. How'd it go? Three separate crashes.
Three. On day one.
Three crashes. And this was after the company had logged, wait for it, only 7,000 total testing miles.
Hold on, 7,000? Miles,
Not bad.
is that considered enough for this kind of public test? That sounds incredibly low, regardless of what caused the crashes.
Well, that's the critical comparison, right? So of the three crashes, okay, two were apparently other cars hitting the Tesla from behind.
Okay.
But the third one involved the Tesla, which did have a safety driver inside, hitting a stationary object, and someone got a minor injury.
Not at all.
Now, put that against Waymo, their main competitor. Waymo reported just 60 crashes over 50 million miles of driving.
50 million versus 7,000. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, that makes Tesla's initial crash rate. I mean, it's not even close. It's more than 100 times higher.
Yeah, orders of magnitude, like you said before. And that kind of debut, it doesn't just wreck cars, does it? It hits public trust hard right from the start, no matter how many gigawatts you promise down the line.
Absolutely undermines confidence.
And this whole competence issue, it's not just cars on the ground. It plays out in geopolitics too, particularly with space launch. It's a good reminder that AI isn't the only tech race happening.
That's a great point. And it's fascinating because, you know, AI gets all the headlines, but the US actually has this other key tech advantage over China right now, purely based on physical engineering, reusable
And
rockets.
SpaceX.
Exactly. There's concern from US Space Force intelligence that if China really masters reusable rockets, they could put satellites and other capabilities into orbit much, much faster than they can now.
And the U.S. advantage is basically SpaceX, isn't it? They've landed that Falcon 9 booster, what, 500 times successfully
Yeah,
now?
around that, yeah. 500 successful landings. And that reusability is the game changer. Without it, China needs something like 14 different kinds of rockets just to launch less than half as often as the US does, mostly with that one reusable Falcon 9.
Okay, so before we dig into the really human side of all this, we should probably just acknowledge how, well, everywhere this tech is becoming, even with the crashes and the space race stuff going on.
Oh, definitely. The applications are popping up everywhere. It shows that the huge investment is filtering down into, well, pretty much every part of life. Take dating.
Dating, okay.
Yeah, Facebook's rolling out an AI dating assistant. It's got this algorithm called Meet Cute, apparently designed to fight swipe fatigue.
So I fatigue. Wow. So AI is managing our dating burnout now.
Seems like it. And then, completely different end of the spectrum, you've got Spox Analytics. Capgemini used this AI platform, Outcome IQ, at the Ryder Cup this year.
Golf tournament.
Yeah, processing like 360 different data points at once, running what-if scenarios live during the match, giving deep strategic insights.
Okay, so it's filtering down everywhere, which brings us right to the core question. What does all this, the massive scale, the sometimes shaky rollout, the ubiquity, what does it actually mean for, the average person trying to get work done or just connect with people?
Right. And this is where the cost of AI stops being this abstract thing you measure in gigawatts or billions of dollars. And it starts becoming something you measure in, like lost hours at work or increased stress or maybe even strained relationships. It gets personal.
And we absolutely have to talk about this idea of work slop. That's the term Harvard Business Review came up with.
Yeah, work slop. It's brilliant. It describes that stuff, you know, AI-generated content for the office. It looks polished, the formatting's perfect.
Right, looks professional.
But it's shallow, it lacks substance, might even be inaccurate. And the key thing is, it dumps the job of fixing it onto whoever receives it.
So it just shifts the work.
Exactly. And you can measure that shift. There was a survey found 40% of US workers said they got work slop just last month.
40%.
And they reported spending, on average, nearly 2 hours fixing each piece of bad AI output they received.
2 hours per item. That adds up incredibly fast.
It does. And if you translate that lost time into salary costs, it comes out to an invisible cost of about $186 per employee per month.
Wow. That's not software cost, that's just wasted time fixing things.
Precisely. The tool meant to boost productivity is creating this whole new layer of cleanup duty, and maybe even worse is the social hit.
How so?
Half the workers in that survey said they view colleagues who send them work slop as, well, less capable, less reliable.
Ouch. So it's actually damaging professional trust between people.
Yeah, it seems to be eroding it.
And that erosion, that sense of things weakening, it goes beyond the office, doesn't it? According to this new Pew Research Center data, the general feeling out there seems pretty worried.
Overwhelmingly so, actually. A big majority of Americans told Pew they're more concerned than excited about AI's rise. Only about 10% felt more excited than concerned.
Only 10%. What are the main worries?
Well, interestingly, connecting back to what we were just saying, it's less about job loss and more about what AI does to sort of human skills. Human abilities.
Okay.
53% believe AI will make people worse at thinking creatively, and half, 50%, think it will erode our ability to form meaningful relationships.
So creativity and connection, those are pretty fundamental.
They really are. And the skepticism, it's actually highest among younger adults, digital natives, under 30.
Really? You might think they'd be more optimistic.
You might, but no. 61% of them worried about creativity and 58% worried about relationships. It's like they see AI potentially impairing character, not enhancing it.
But here's the paradox you mentioned earlier, right? Because despite all that concern, that cynicism.
Yeah, despite all that, three quarters of the same people said they'd still use AI for daily tasks.
Okay, so how does that work?
They want the efficiency, they want the time savings. But crucially, they seem to want it mostly for analytical stuff or, impersonal tasks, not for things that touch creativity or relationships directly.
They want the practical benefit without the existential baggage.
Exactly. And the number one reason cited for using AI, saving time. Someone in the survey put it perfectly. They said, AI lets us save something we can never get back.
Time.
That tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really sums it up. Wanting the time back, but fearing what the tool that saves the time might be doing to us, to the skills that make us human.
That's the core of it, I think.
Okay, so let's try and synthesize this. We've seen AI pushing the absolute limits of infrastructure, computation, the $100 billion, the 10 gigawatts.
Massive scale up.
Right. And at the exact same time, we're seeing these immediate system-level problems with trust, with safety, with actual human productivity, the robotaxi crashes, the rise of work slop.
Yeah, the vision versus the messy reality.
Now, before we get to our final thought, we should quickly mention one other big tech story from the reports, not AI, but still about foundational security.
Oh, yeah, that was quite something. It's a good reminder that security threats aren't always about complex code.
What happened? The Secret Service busted this huge, apparently well-funded network operating out of New York, actually near the UN General Assembly,
Right.
and it involved physical hardware, over 300 SIM card servers, and get this, 100,000 SIM cards.
100,000 SIM cards. What could that even do?
Well, the system was powerful enough to potentially process 30 million text messages a minute.
30 million a minute.
Yeah. And authorities worried it could have been used to potentially shut down mobile service across the city. Imagine that during an emergency.
Wow. Okay, so a huge physical infrastructure threat running in parallel to all the AI developments.
Right. It just underscores that while we're focused on the algorithms of the future, these basic physical security challenges are still very much with us.
Okay, so that brings us back then
Okay.
to that central contradiction we started with. We're building this absolutely immense, power-hungry AI infrastructure.
Yep, designed specifically to solve problems faster, save us time.
And yet, the single biggest fear people have, according to Pew anyway, is that this same AI will end up destroying the very human skills, creativity, critical thinking, maybe even connection, that we actually need to identify problems and figure out how to solve them in the first place.
The tool might undermine the user.
So, given that tension, here's the question we want to leave you with. If this whole system is built to save us time, partly by automating thought, is the ultimate cost of AI really measured in gigawatts and dollars? Or is it measured in maybe a diminishing of human character itself?
Something to definitely think about, especially as you decide what to do with all that time AI might be saving you.